This is Living the Breed with Fox News Chief Legal Correspondent Shannon Breed.
All right, welcome to this week's Living the Breed podcast. We have a very special guest. I would say our first celebrity guest of this time. We have got with us Utah Senator Mike Lee, and we're going to talk about so many things, from Russia to the Supreme Court to the confirmation hearings for Trump nominees. And we might even talk a little college football. I'm not sure. We'll see where this goes. Senator, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be with you. By the way, you took great liberties with the word celebrity. I just think that stretches that word beyond its breaking point, but flattered nonetheless.
Well, okay, you are first high-profile guest. That's what we'll say on the podcast. Let's start with some serious topics. It is a very busy time on Capitol Hill right now. Several Trump nominees in the midst of their hearings, sometimes contentious. Some, it seems, will be under more fire than others. The Democrats have made clear they're not going to make this easy. These will continue for several days. What's your impression so far?
Look, these hearings are going well. Senator Sessions is doing incredibly well in his hearing. He's been very well prepared. He's a smart guy, and he's someone who cares about his colleagues, about his constituents, about the American people, and it shows. So the more time they have to expose Jeff Sessions to the American people through these hearings, the better it's going to be for Jeff Sessions.
What about Rex Tillerson, obviously up for Secretary of State? He's getting a lot of tough questioning about Russia. You have seen probably even more intel than we'll ever know about with respect to concerns regarding Russia and our election, their intentions to interfere or influence. What are your worries or concerns about Russia and our relationship moving forward?
First of all, as it relates to Rex Tillerson, I'm not seeing anything at this point that would give me pause about whether he can serve as Secretary of State. The fact that this is someone who has served as the CEO of Exxon and has therefore done business around the world in Russia and in many other places shouldn't disqualify someone from serving as Secretary of State. So that doesn't bother me, and I don't see that as a reason to vote against him. As far as I can tell, he's going to do well and he's going to be confirmed. Look, we've got a long, complicated relationship with Russia. They were our Cold War adversary, and those wounds don't heal quickly. So, but that said, they're also a trading partner of sorts. They're a potential ally in many respects, and so I think we've got to proceed cautiously, but hopeful that that things will go well with that relationship.
Okay, so there is a lot that will meet Mr. Trump when he walks in the door as president. There's talk of repealing Obamacare. We have a number of foreign policy issues. Where do you hope that he'll focus? Where can you be of help to him as he tackles a broad array of issues on day one?
You know, I think that one of the many reasons the American people elected Donald Trump as our 45th president is because the American people are feeling squeezed by a federal system that has allowed too much power to accumulate in Washington, D.C. That people have seen that they've had power removed from them and from their control in two steps, versus power has been taken away from the people at the state and local level and moved to Washington. And then a second time, as it's been transferred away, voluntarily relinquished by their elected lawmakers in Washington and handed over to unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats. This has made the rich and powerful richer and more powerful in Washington, but it has hurt everyone else. It's one of the reasons why 6 of our nation's 10 wealthiest counties are now suburbs of Washington, D.C., this notwithstanding the fact that it's not the store of any vast natural resources. It's not a technological innovation hub. It's not a banking hub. The money's here just because the power is here, concentrated among the hands of a few elites. So what I'd like to see is for President Obama to come in and as part of the drain the swamp, in order to drain the swamp.
President Trump.
What did I say?
President Obama, which he is still the president as we are talking on our podcast. But I know you mean he's not sticking around for a third term, is he? Because if he is, you need to let us know what you know about that.
Heavens no, and I'm mortified that I made that mistake. Having served 6 years in the Senate during President Obama's presidency, some of those grammatical habits die hard, not even having realized it. And, thank heavens you corrected me. I think one of the things that President Trump can do and that I, one of the things that I hope he will do is to come into office with the understanding that he needs to restore the constitutional structural protections that were put in place. These, the vertical protection we call federalism, that says most of the power is supposed to remain close to the people. And the horizontal protection, which we call separation of powers, which says that we've got one branch of government that makes laws, one branch that enforces laws, one branch that interprets laws. If he can do that, he'll go down in history as one of our great presidents, and I'm optimistic to help him achieve exactly that.
You referenced something that you and I have talked about many times, which is the regulatory state, the administrative state that is not, some argue it has become something it wasn't intended to be, almost a fourth branch, because there is so much power in the regulators and the administrators, from agencies, from the IRS to the EPA. You fought hard about that. We've talked about that. What do you think President Trump, once he takes office, can do, you know, without ever going through Congress, as far as undoing some of the things that have been done administratively? And when it's time to do something substantive, are you hopeful that he will resist that temptation to use the pen and paper, as his predecessor has talked about doing, and fight harder to get things through Congress, because they're so easily undone if they're not done that way in the first place?
Yes, I am hopeful on that front. I think he will fight to preserve this because he knows that it's the right thing to do. He knows the American people are counting on it. I had a good conversation with him just a few weeks ago, just shortly before Christmas, with President-elect Trump. We talked, among other things, about the need for regulatory reform, about the need to pass reforms like the REINS Act, R-E-I-N-S stands for Regulations from the Executive and Needy of Scrutiny, focusing on the fact that new regulations issued by government federal bureaucracies that have a significant effect on the economy need to be approved by Congress before they take effect. You know, those regulations 20 years ago, all federal regulations were costing the economy about $300 billion a year, which is a lot of money. Today, they're costing the American economy about $2 trillion a year. And so, like our national debt, the federal regulatory expense has multiplied six, sevenfold just in the last couple of decades. That's a big problem, and it's a problem that I hope and expect Mr. Trump will work tirelessly to correct.
Presidents do obviously leave quite a legacy behind them. President Obama recently took some steps to set some land aside out west, a lot of land, and it was not met with applause by you or many other Utah lawmakers. There are those who would say this is important for the environment. We want to preserve pristine national lands. Tell us why there is an issue with what he did.
First of all, it's important for people to understand that in parts of the United States, particularly parts of the western United States, states like my state, the state of Utah, the federal government owns most of the land already. The federal government owns about two-thirds of the land in my state. In some counties, the federal land ownership is particularly pronounced, where in some parts of our state, the federal government owns more than 90% of the land. And what we see in those areas is a couple of things happen. Number one, the school systems, the fire and police systems are underfunded because those counties rely on property tax. And when you've only got 5 to 10% of the land that's in private hands, there's not a whole lot there to tax. Secondly, economic activity generally is chilled, thus further depressing their revenue streams, because of the fact that basically everything that anyone wants to do requires some type of permission to act, to do a certain set of things on federal land. And when that permission is handed out penuriously, it has a very detrimental effect on local economies. So focusing specifically on this issue, what the president did just between Christmas and New Year's, was to designate a 1.35 million acre national monument in San Juan County, Utah. San Juan County is Utah's poorest county, in part because the federal government owns more than 90% of the land there. The local population of San Juan County, Native Americans and non-Native Americans alike, are overwhelmingly opposed to this because they know that it's going to make it more difficult for them to make a living in San Juan County. The president disregarded all of that and just said, well, I want to do it anyway. Apparently, he thought it was more important to satisfy the demands of radical environmental extremists who wanted him to do this, notwithstanding the fact that he was hurting the very people who will be most affected by it. So I think it's wrong, and I've had good conversations with members of the Trump administration, what we are saying, and what I believe the Trump administration tends to agree with, is that what can be done with the stroke of the executive pen can also be undone with the stroke of the executive pen when the new president is sworn into office.
Also, one of the very first things he's going to have to do as a new president, and maybe he'll announce before, is choose a new Supreme Court justice. I find it fascinating that not only are you on the list, but your brother, who is a Utah Supreme Court justice, is also on the list. Is there sibling rivalry there? Did you get together for Christmas? Are you going to arm wrestle over it? I mean, two siblings on the short list for the Supreme Court. How does that work at home?
The great thing about my relationship with my brother is that I can confidently say either he or I would be absolutely thrilled to be able to say my brother's on the court. And there's no hesitation there on my part or on his. Tom has the advantage of having been a sitting judge, a member of the Utah Supreme Court, for the last 6.5 years. Interestingly enough, he was confirmed by the Utah State Senate after having been nominated by Utah Governor Gary Herbert the day after I won my primary in 2010. So it was an interesting 24-hour period for my mom.
You're a family of underachievers, based on what I've been able to research so far. Pretty incredible family. What do you attribute that to? I mean, was it your parents, the way that you were raised, or is it an internal motivation? What is it? Because, I mean, seven kids, right? You have six brothers and sisters, and you all seem pretty amazing.
Well, we had a lot of interesting conversations around the dinner table. I sometimes joke that, only half jokingly, of course, that I was 30 before I realized that not every family discusses the presentment clause over dinner. But these are the kinds of conversations we routinely had over the dinner table and while working out in the yard and things like that. My dad was a professor of constitutional law. He served as President Reagan's first Solicitor General. And he was really into the Constitution. He was a big believer in the Constitution generally, and in particular in the importance of federalism and separation of powers. So that was ingrained into me from the time I was a young child. I started watching Supreme Court arguments when I was 10 years old.
What?
Yeah, well, my dad's job involved arguing cases in front of the Supreme Court, and I realized initially it was a good way to miss school. My parents would say, yeah, that's a good reason to miss school. We'll let you miss school for a few hours if you want to go watch your dad's argument at the court. Initially, it was like going to church in a different language. You had to be hold really still. You had to be quiet. And I couldn't understand a lot of what was being said. Over time, I started paying closer attention. I started picking up on some of the nuances, and I found that I really enjoyed it.
Well, and if you became a Supreme Court justice, you could then potentially overturn your brother if he ever got something wrong in Utah. Have you thought about that?
You know, to be honest, I have not thought about that, but that is a fantastic point. And if I should be so fortunate as to be nominated by President Trump, and if I were confirmed by the Senate to that position, that would be a lot of fun, overturning my brother.
Yeah. Just a little added bonus. Yeah. All right, I want to ask you some quick questions. Not exactly a lightning round, but close to that. I asked my last guest about the college football playoff system. Did you watch the national championship? Because that was quite a game. But what do you think about the current playoff system? Can it be improved upon?
Look, it can always be improved upon, but it's so much better than it was a few years ago. And so I'm just thrilled that it is as good as it is now. I'd love to see it improved upon. I'd love to see it extended so that more teams have the opportunity to come into play there. I did watch the game. I did not watch the entire game. I got tired and I ended up falling asleep. And of all games during which not to fall asleep, that would have been one. But hey.
Do you have any bad habits? I see some jelly beans on your desk. That's very Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
But any, I wouldn't say vices because I have a hard time believing you would have any. But any habits we need to know about or that we don't know about?
Ice cream. Ice cream is a problem for me.
What's the best flavor?
Well, it depends. I mean, the thing about ice cream is that if you're a real ice cream fan, you don't cling to only one flavor. And it depends in part on what you're in the mood for. There are times when I actually like vanilla bean. There are other times when I really like, for example, Cherry Garcia, Ben & Jerry's. Mm-hmm. Very, very good flavor.
Mm-hmm. How lefty of you?
Yeah, yeah. Lefty of me. Some of my taste in music is also lefty. I'm a classic rock fan, and most classic rock bands are not exactly what we would call conservative.
Okay, so are we talking like 70s? We're talking some into the 80s. Do you count hair bands? They are, you know, they're in or out?
Hair bands, as such, are not pure classic rock. What I'm talking about primarily are things like Led Zeppelin, The Doors, Rush. I also am a big U2 fan, even though U2 isn't, strictly speaking, what we would call classic rock. It's outstanding music, and I was thrilled the other day when U2 announced a Joshua Tree tour. Mm-hmm. I still remember the moment when I bought the Joshua Tree album in the late winter of 1987. I went to the store clerk at the music store. You know, those things don't exist any longer. And I said, "What do you think about this album? Have you heard it?" And she said, "Yeah, it's disappointing." And I thought, "I don't care. It's you two. I'm going to buy it. I'm sure I'll like it." And I loved it. I had listened to the whole thing by the time I got home. And it became a part of me. So I was thrilled that they're doing a tour.
That will be exciting. Also, do you still keep cassettes or old albums of things that you have? Because not everything is on iTunes. I have a bag of cassettes I refuse to get rid of. My husband thinks I'm crazy. But I actually kept an old boombox, which was a present from a previous boyfriend. Not that I had many before my husband. But I kept it so I can play my cassettes. So do you have old stuff and how do you play it? Or do you just, have you found everything on iTunes that you love?
First of all, I'm so thrilled to find out that you have that same habit, because I routinely have the same argument with my wife, Sharon, because I like to keep some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. She points out that it's a terrible waste of space. The sound quality on cassettes is not great, especially compared to what we have now. And it really is hard to find something that will still play it, but I still do have one thing that will play it, a cassette at home, and I have a bunch of cassette tapes.
Listen, we don't go back to 8-tracks, but we can say cassettes. Now it's CDs, and now it's not even that anymore. Senator, we know you have very important work to do. So we thank you for taking time out on the Living the Brain podcast, and we will watch all your endeavors on Capitol Hill. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Living the Brain on Fox News Radio.